I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you so much for listening. As we always say, it's a privilege to do what we do and talk to such wonderful people who listen to us.
Oh my God, I got the nicest message yesterday.
Oh good.
I hope this isn't embarrassing, Sean. I'm going to read it out because it was so nice. And Geoffrey doesn't know what goes on Instagram.
No, I don't.
That's the only way I can fill him in. She says, I hope you don't mind me messaging, but I have to tell you and thank you for your podcast. During this pandemic especially, I have eagerly anticipated a Monday when I could listen to you both. I'm also so sad when you take a break, but use your downtime to go back and re-listen, going back to series one. I really do appreciate that you both have your own careers, but in your own time do something that so many of us love to listen to. It's like listening to two friends chatting and listening to see if Betsy makes an appearance. I will be becoming a contributor on Patreon. And thank you again for all you do. It's really, really appreciated.
Oh, that's so nice.
Very happy Christmas and New Year.
That's wonderful. Gosh. Well, Sean, thank you. Shan, sorry. That's wonderful. How absolutely super.
How nice is that?
More than nice. It's wonderful.
Yeah, we're very touched.
We are. But we're very touched most of the time, to be honest. I mean, just by the generosity of the people who write to us and suggest things. I mean, we've got to talk about a competition.
Yeah, so we've had our, I love that I've written on the top of this piece of paper, podcast famous people competition. Sam, our producer, called it something much cleverer, like listener's choice.
Yes.
Anyway, lots of you have written to us. Thank you so much. I'm just going to run through a few of the ideas we had, and then I'm going to tell you the top three that will be the ones that we will be voting from. But some of the people that came up were OJ Simpson, Aaron Hernandez, Jenny Ripper told us about that on Instagram, Johnny
Stompinato.
Lana Turner's boyfriend.
Yeah, Lana Turner's boyfriend.
That was a suggestion from Deborah Smith Plummer, also on Instagram, who also suggested Bob Crane and Phil Spector.
Yes.
The disappearance of Richie Edwards, who was the guitarist from the Manic Street Preachers.
That came from Phil Brown.
That was Phil Brown. John Lennon, suggested by our own Diana Fletcher and also Julie Evans on Instagram, and also quite a lot of other people. Mrs. Bean and Baby Bean. Also suggested John Lennon. Tupac and Biggie. Sid Vicious again. John Benet Ramsey, there was a good documentary about. She's a girl who was like a little pageant girl or dancing girl or something in America.
Yes.
There was a good documentary made about her. Who else? Flesh Skipper on Instagram just said we could cover the whole of the Scandinavian black metal scene from the early 90s.
It's going to be a small job, isn't it? for the suggestion.
I thought it might be hard for us to narrow that down, but I like the fact that it was something that we could look at. William James Limaker on Instagram suggested Leslie Grantham, who you know played Dirty Den.
Yes.
Apparently, when he was in the army in Germany, he killed a taxi driver.
Yes, that's a famous case.
Mark Wahlberg, I presume she means Marky Mark. Melissa Whitehead Sperry suggested as he went to prison in 1988 for 45 days for assaulting someone. Did not know that. John Wilkes Booth came up.
Yeah, John Wilkes Booth, man who killed Lincoln.
Right. April suggested him. So yes, there were lots and lots of different suggestions. So thank you so much. The three that I've selected, Geoffrey didn't have a choice. Sorry, Dad. Are OJ Simpson, John Lennon, and Gianni Versace.
Fine.
Because they're
contemporary icons.
Yeah, and, you know, anyway, that shall be the Christmas episode. So the top tier members of our Patreon will vote.
Okay.
Please put your votes in. You've got until the 11th of December, so Geoffrey's got enough time to prepare.
Yep, okay.
And that will be our final episode of the series. And talking of Patreon, we've got some new members. Geoffrey's going to read your names out. Thank you.
I was forwarded this list. It's very, very special. I hope I pronounced the names correctly. There's Ace Vivas. Then there's one man or woman who wants to remain anonymous. There's Natalie, there's Julie Weil, Louise Bishop, Ben, Phoebe Harding, and Diane. Lovely. Thank you all so much.
Thank you all so much.
It's really fabulous. And Mo sends me little notes saying, don't forget to mention this. Because I would probably forget my head if it wasn't screwed on, as my father would say.
Sure, that's not true.
Well, have you had a good week? Half lockdown, half unlockdown.
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Yeah.
We reopened the Garrick on Wednesday.
Oh, that's nice. Is it nice to be back?
Yeah, it was. Very nice. Very nice. Everybody was very happy.
Good.
But we were, you know, we have to conform to all the rules, which are, you know, legendary. So it's socially distanced and no groups bigger than six. All right. All perfectly doable.
Make it work. What about the substantial meal rule?
Well, the substantial meal rule has actually held up pretty well.
That's good. Probably good for some members to have to eat while they drink.
Yes. The Chelsea Arts have been doing it. They went through their bar menu, not their restaurant menu, their bar menu, to check what was acceptable. And they said almost everything, except you can't just order a bowl of chips.
Fair enough.
Which seems to me to be perfectly reasonable.
Mm.
But there have been some horror stories, haven't there, with people being chased out of pubs the moment they finished their meal.
Yeah, sounds miserable.
Yeah, it's really very strange. But otherwise, no, as we say, come out of lockdown, which is to some extent, I found lockdown two harder than lockdown one.
Mm.
I think everybody did, actually.
Yeah, I think so, because it wasn't uniform.
No.
It wasn't like everyone was in the same boat.
No. Well, given the humour that I always seem to give you, I'm not going to predict whether there might be another lockdown after Christmas.
I was joking because obviously Jeffrey and I talk all the time, and during the first lockdown he said, absolutely by September we'll be back. That's it. We'll be back in thing. And then it will get to June, he'll be like, we're not going to be out of this before December. Then we'll get later and we'll be like, I'm very sure that by spring it's going to be absolutely, we'll be fine by then.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not going to make any more predictions.
But you say each one so with such conviction.
False. Yeah.
As if you've totally forgotten that you've said the previous one.
Yes, well, I probably had. Mm. Wouldn't be unusual. However, I haven't forgotten this case, what we're doing today.
Right, so we're going to get going. So this is the first one. As you listeners will know, obviously, we're doing two famous people in advance of our
Christmas special.
Christmas special. And a couple of people have actually requested this one, I think probably because we mentioned that BBC Storyville documentary went up on iPlayer, but also I messaged you, but I don't know if you saw, but Sam told me there's another good documentary on Amazon.
I saw it.
Which I think she felt weighed more in his favour.
Well, let me... So
anyway,
we
let's
should
discuss.
Explain what we're going to do.
Okay, so we are doing the... trial of? No, or just
the
story
of? Life of.
The life of Oscar Pistorius.
Yes. He was, as I'm sure the world knows, a professional sprinter, but he sprinted on blades. He was often referred to as the blade runner and the fastest man on no legs.
And the fastest, he was the first man ever, well, Paralympic to run in
an Olympic
race.
Yes, okay. So, he was born on the 22nd of November, 1986.
No way. The day before me. Well,
no, no.
3 years.
Yeah, 22nd of November.
Yeah, I know.
He had an elder brother called Carl and a younger sister called Amy. It was a Christian household, and Pistorius always credited his mother, Sheeda, with being a big influence on his life. Sadly, she died at the age of 43 when he was just 15 in 2002. It's an Italian family a long way back, but he speaks Afrikaans.
They live in South Africa.
And lives in South, and as well as English. And he was born with fibula hemimelia, which effectively means the absence of the fibula in both legs, in other words, the bottom half of the leg. Beneath the knee. And when he was 11 months old, both legs were amputated. But Oscar Pistorius wasn't put off in the least. He played rugby, tennis, water polo. Many people, in fact, didn't even realise he had no legs. He could wrestle, box, skip, do press-ups. What he liked most was rugby. He played rugby with the prosthetics. But a nasty knee injury in 2003 saw him take up running. And he said later, "I never looked back." The first blades were made in South Africa, but they broke. And Pistorius was referred to an American Paralympic runner, whom he was later to run against, called Bruce Freyshaw, who got his blades from an Icelandic company called Osur. And in fact, Osur then became famous for making Pistorius's blades.
Oh, wow.
And they were, well, they all always call them J-shaped, but it's more like a sort of, it is a J, but it's sort of,
yeah,
more like an L in a way.
Yeah.
Because a J would be pointing backwards.
But they're curved, aren't they?
They're curved.
Look kind of springy.
And Pistorius, as a young man, memorably said, "You're not disabled by the disabilities you have. You're able by the abilities you have." Anyway, he competed in what is known in Paralympic terms as the T44, which is for events for men with only a single leg amputee. He could have competed in the T43, which was for double amputees. But he chose the harder one because I think he wanted to prove himself as the best. He was a remarkable talent. In 2004, at the Paralympics in Athens, he came third in the 100 metres and first in the 200 metres in a world record time of 21.97 seconds. There were complaints, however, that his flexi foot cheaters, as they were then called, the blades, gave him an advantage over runners with ordinary feet and ankles.
I mean, that is bonkers. Who can complain about that?
Well, in 2007, tests found that they did give Pistorius an advantage, and he was banned from competition under IAAF rules and banned from running in the 2004 Beijing Summer Olympics. He was, quite rightly, furious because they hadn't tested him running round a bend. They'd only tested him in straight lines. It was a very strange. In fact, it took them to the Court of Arbitration for Sport.
Also, it's such a sort of poor excuse, isn't it? It's like, oh, you're too good, even though you're disadvantaged, quotes. So we're going to say it's because of the kit you've got that makes you too good.
Yes.
I think that's really poor.
Well, it was. And indeed,
it's really shoddy.
The decision by the South African authorities, and it was the South African authorities, was overturned. But South Africa refused to select him as a matter of principle after a wrangle. Nevertheless, he did compete in the Paralympics. This was the Summer Olympics in Beijing. He did compete in the Paralympics in Beijing. And he won the 100 metres, the 200 metres and the 400 metres, again, in a world record time of 47.49 seconds. He was, quite simply, the world's fastest Paralympic sprinter, a man who literally had the world at his feet. Pistorius became, well, certainly a national celebrity in South Africa and an international celebrity. The sponsorships poured in. I think at one point it was estimated he was making $2 million a year in sponsorship. At the 2012 Olympics in London, Pistorius became the first amputee runner to compete in the ordinary 400 metres against ordinary runners, able-bodied runners, and also in the 4x400 metres relay. He didn't win, but he was chosen to carry the South African flag at the closing ceremony for the proper Olympic Games, so to speak. Nevertheless, when it came to the Paralympics, he was also carrying the flag as it was opened, and he won the 100 metres, the 400 metres, came second in the 200 metres and won the 4x400 relay running the final leg. He became literally an international celebrity.
Oh, yeah, he was humongous. Everyone was obsessed with him.
Yes. I mean, he was. It would be fair to say that he was an extraordinary, is an extraordinary talent with an incredible determination and great abilities, but perhaps also a little arrogant.
Yeah.
Mind you would be, wouldn't you? Well, if you achieved that much.
Maybe. Or maybe you do have to have like that certain kind of single-mindedness to...
Yes.
To get to
get there. But of course, people tend to forget the achievements. They were all overshadowed in the end. Mm. Not unlike O.J. Simpson.
Which is a shame, because I think the other thing about him at the time, before everything happened, is that he was very inspirational to a lot of people.
I think so. Particularly people with disabilities.
And young people.
And it's. I think that's the tragedy of it. Mm. That I have to confess that Pistorius, for me, is a very Marmite character.
Yeah, we talked about this
you either,
a little bit, don't we?
You really like Pistorius, or you're very suspicious of him. Mm. And we were just talking before we started this podcast about some television documentaries there are. And the great big one, Storyville, is really pretty anti-Pistorius.
Yeah.
But there is another on Amazon, which is rather more pro. But we'll come to that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Let's first of all remind each other and the listeners of what happened. It's Valentine's Day, Thursday, the 14th of February, 2013.
The year after the London Olympics.
The year after the London Olympics. He is a world star. And he's also South Africa's best known sportsman.
Mm.
You know. But then... it all went wrong. At some point that night, in the early hours of the morning, Pistorius was staying in his house in Pretoria with his then-girlfriend, a former model, called Reva Steenkamp. And for some reason, and we won't ever possibly know exactly what happened, Reva was in quite a small loo off the bedroom. And Pistorius woke up and picked up a 9mm semi-automatic pistol, which he had in his on his bedside table, and fired 4 shots through the door, killing Reva Steenkamp. Pistorius has never denied, nor did he deny at his trial, that he shot her. He simply said, "I thought she was an intruder. I didn't mean to do it." And there is the hinge of the argument about Pistorius. Mm. Did he think he could get away with it? Did he think that nobody would agree? Well, South Africa has a tremendous record of violence and criminal violence, unfortunately, which is why he had the gun.
Mm. And house breaks and stuff.
And housebreaking, absolutely. Mm. So, you know, it is possible to sympathise with him for that. It's also fair to say that he had... about a year before, taken the same handgun to a restaurant where he started waving it around. But we'll come back to that. The case played to the South African obsessions with race, crime and celebrity. Pistorius, no one needs to be reminded, was of course white.
Mm.
Now, exactly what was going through his mind, we can't honestly say. But we do know that on the 3rd of March 2014, that is almost a year after the shooting, his trial began in Pretoria High Court. But it was adjourned on the 20th of May 2014 to allow Pistorius to be given a psychological evaluation. The defence had suggested that Pistorius had a generalised anxiety disorder, which would account for him leaping out of bed and firing at the bathroom door.
Mm.
But on the 30th of June 2014, the state prosecutor, Jerry Nell, confirmed that Pistorius did not suffer from personality disorder or mental illness, and that rendered him not criminally responsible for his actions. In other words, he was sane and responsible with that action.
He was just very hysterical during the whole trial as well, wasn't he?
Was. The trial was conducted by the most marvellous, very thoughtful judge, whom I think, and if you look at the documentaries that show her, I can never pronounce her first name correctly. It's Thokozile, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Misipa.
Mm-hmm.
Very respected and conducted the trial, as far as any kind could see, with admirable fairness. But on the 12th of September 2014, Pistorius was found guilty of culpable homicide and a charge of reckless endangerment. That was waving the gun around in the restaurant. And the judge gave him 5 years.
Wait, sorry. In the trial in 2014,
yes,
after he'd killed Reva Steenkamp, he was given a punishment for something he'd done previously. Can you do that?
Yes, you can do that. Yes, both charges were entered at the trial.
Oh, okay.
Well, now things get very dark. In July 2015, Pistorius was recommended for early release from prison as he had served, this is under South African law,
mm-hmm,
1/6 of his sentence. And he was given an official release date of the 21st of August 2015. But on the 19th of August, this was blocked. He was finally released from prison on the 19th of October 2015 and placed under house arrest. Long before he was released, the prosecutor, Jerry Nell, asked for leave to appeal against the culpable homicide verdict and to replace it with murder. The appeal was heard by 5 judges after his release to house arrest, who unanimously agreed that Pistorius was guilty of murder and not culpable homicide, that he knew what he was doing when he shot through the door, and he must have known
that Reva was in there,
that someone was in there, and he had intent to kill them.
And if she was staying the night with him, then she wasn't in the bed, so it would might be have quite worked out where she was first.
Yes, I mean, the judges, and I think it's the most extraordinary phrase, describe Pistorius's evidence as a snowball of lies. They returned the case to Judge Masipa for sentencing, which was adjourned until the 6th of July 2016. He was still under house arrest. Judge Masipa, to the fury of the prosecutors, gave us Pistorius 6 years for murder and suggested that he be freed in 3, in other words, in 2019. He accused the prosecution, and particularly Geronel, of a personal vendetta against him. Well, in the wake of Judge Masipa's decision, the National Prosecuting Authority said they would appeal what they called the shockingly lenient 6-year sentence, giving the impression, which I think a lot of people did have, that actually Judge Masipa was very sympathetic to Pistorius.
Mm.
Masipa refused to reconsider her verdict and her sentencing. But the National Prosecuting Authority went ahead, and on the 24th of November 2017, the senior South African court increased his sentence to 13 years and 5 months, i.e. 15 years less the time served in prison. And he was returned to prison.
And he's there now?
Yes. Pistorius appealed against the extension, but lost. He will not be eligible for parole until at least 2023. But we have certainly not heard the last of Oscar Pistorius.
Mm.
Oscar Pistorius seems to capture people's imagination in a way that is quite remarkable. I mean, I can remember the trial vividly.
Yeah.
I can also, I mean, I've watched all out what seems like hours of documentaries.
What, so should we just recap what happened or what they said happened? He was in the house.
She was in the house.
She was in the house. He woke up, thought someone was in the
bathroom, which was locked.
He didn't have his prosthetics on. No. He felt vulnerable.
Collected the handgun from his bedside
and
drawer.
Shot through the door and hit her.
4 times.
He hit her 4 times?
Yes. And it was a big gun.
I suppose if it's a small... Then he must have assumed the person was what? Like on cowering on the loo or sat on... I don't know. Yeah.
It was really, that was the legal issue was he aware when he shot through the door that he could possibly kill someone?
Yeah.
And that in the end, the 5 judges were convinced that he knew he might well.
And there was quite a lot of kind of evidence or sort of speculation around, like, oh, there was often shouting from the house. And what did you say? I actually didn't manage to finish watching the documentary. Could you tell me, you said that the evidence or the interview with the previous girlfriend was quite interesting.
Yes. I mean, the previous girlfriend underlined just how big a temper
he could have.
Pistorius had. And if you like, it's not really... It's not evidence of the crime so much, but it's evidence of Pistorius's attitude.
Mm. But he might have had a kind of god complex of being so successful and so revered.
And so fated on every side. And there is personally, I find him not particularly nice.
Yeah.
Not someone I sympathise with easily. But I think he got a fair trial.
And I suppose then on the other side of it, for people who are more sympathetic towards him, the general feeling is, you know, as you said, housebreaking is incredibly common in South Africa. He, you know, is still a disabled man who at that point would have felt very frightened and worried and woken up. And, you know, he was defending himself and his house.
And I think it's fair to say, too, Mo, that Pistorius was clearly... throughout his trial, very anxious.
Yeah, he just cried all the time, didn't he? From the moment because he obviously had to call the police straight away and be like, "I've just shot somebody."
But part of the prosecution case rotated around the evidence of neighbours who heard arguments in the house, which sort of plays to the former girlfriend's evidence.
Yeah.
Had he lost his temper?
Had a big row. Had she hid in the loo? Had he just lost his thing, rag, and shot through there?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll never know.
I'm afraid we won't.
But it's a fascinating it's a fascinating case.
It is a fascinating case. And there's absolutely no doubt that Pistorius is, in a sense, his own worst enemy.
Yeah. Because he does come across unlikable. To me also, I find him kind of creepy. And I don't know, it's that weird thing about whether you project onto, do you like think back to when you saw him race and think like, did he always come across a bit cocky? Or just like, am I projecting that now that I think that, you know, he maybe is a cold-blooded killer? Was it premeditated? Was it just like fit of rage? Betsy's being very needy.
Was it a fit of rage? Was it premeditated?
What did the French say about the crime of passion?
Crime of passion.
Would it have gone under that for them?
Well, it probably would, but there isn't a crime of passion under
South African law.
No. He was very well defended, I would say, as well. In fact, both barristers or attorneys, they were called, were on top of their game. They really played a... And there was a lot of conflicting evidence. There were some reports of witnesses from, you know, 100 metres
really
away,
far away,
a long way away.
How
could they have heard? And, you know, there was... Was he just too grand for some people? Were some people just determined to have a go at him? And this was...
And also, I suppose the other thing that we haven't talked about is, like, when it happened, obviously he just, like... For lots of people, he had just let down the whole country.
Yes.
Like, he stood for something so significant that they would have just been like, he definitely did it. He's awful. We have to put him away. We have to pretend he was never our hero. We have to just, you know. And then other people were like, no, he's still our hero. He didn't do it. He's, you know, that's the kind of two, for the South African people, I suppose.
He went from hero to zero in absolute no time.
Mm.
I do believe, I'll just stick to that original point, I do believe that he got a fair trial. I think the evidence was fairly presented. And his case was well presented too, actually.
Yeah, they did like draw out all the rooms and map everything out. Absolutely. And all sorts. Absolutely.
Produced the door through which the shots were.
Oh, did they?
But yes, in court, you know, with the bullet holes.
Wow.
The case was very well presented and I think judged impeccably. Judge Masipa was...
And that's all you can ask for, I suppose, isn't it? Yes. A fair trial.
Yeah, but it still rankles, I think.
Mm. I think there's something very uncomfortable about it.
It makes
isn't
you
there?
Feel uncomfortable, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, well, we may well get back to O.J. Simpson, but I watched the whole of O.J., of course.
Oh, God, what, the dramatisation?
The dramatisation.
Yeah, me too, I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah,
Cuba we Gooding. May get O.J., we don't know.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
We don't know. Well, no. Thanks, just to round off, that was Oscar Pistorius.
Yes, and a very interesting case to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the two we're doing in the run-up to
the one
Christmas one, for me, are a nice change because they involve moral dilemmas.
Mm.
And sometimes do get to the point, if you're just dealing with straight-out horrid murder, that it gets pretty tough at times to just deal with it. Because you're aware of the terrible suffering.
Mm.
Well,
of course, Paul Reaver Strauss, Steenkamp's family were...
Well, they were desolate.
Absolutely decimated,
weren't they? Desolated by it.
Mm.
There is a genuine argument, which we've just rehearsed, about what was it?
Yeah, and that thing about how we put people on a pedestal and then do they then think they can get away with something? Like what does that... So, and also that kind of de-idolization of somebody committing a crime who you've made an icon or whatever. You know, does that just make them human again? You know, like when you work out your parents are human.
Well, yeah, I wasn't going to do a joke here, but it would be fair to say that Pistorius's feet were certainly made of clay.
Well, anyway, there we go. Oscar Pistorius.
Well, let's just do something a tiny bit lighthearted. Do we have to remind anyone about Patreon or...?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered it at the top end. We can remind people that we're going to CrimeCon next year.
Yes, we're going to CrimeCon next year. And I'm going to start a CrimeCon book club.
Jeffrey's going to do a book club, guys. And they're going to send out books that you can read. And then you get to do a live Instagram with Jeffrey talking about the book afterwards. Which is just absolutely my favourite thing ever.
Well,
isn't it so cool?
I hope it works.
Also, the idea of you working out how to do a live Instagram feed is almost better than...
Yes, will be memorable.
I will help you.
Oh, that's great.
I think you'd be in trouble otherwise.
Anyway, CrimeCon is on in June 2021.
We'd love for you to come.
COVID allowing.
We're going to be doing a live podcast. We're going to be on a stand where you can come and meet us and we'll sign things for you. And Jeffrey's going to do something else as well because he's a featured star. True crime legend.
True crime. Gee
whiz. True crime legend.
Oh, well. What are you doing this week, Mo?
I am doing lots of things.
But nothing very significant.
I'm going to the Harry Potter studio tour with my friend Megan.
You love the Harry Potter studio
well,
tour.
Well, yeah. It's like Megan's... No, it will be really fun. And it's Christmassy. They have three different types of fake snow. So it's our festive jaunt.
I love it. That's very good.
Our festive
and
jaunt.
And you do have a wear... After you have, do you have to wear a mask all the way around?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
You must do.
And socially distanced. But, I mean, I personally prefer that if it means I don't have to be so near other people.
Yeah.
It means there'll be less people generally, which sounds ideal to me.
Yes. Likely. Goodness me.
But yeah, that's it mainly. And then just two more weeks. How many weeks do I have to do? Two.
Two.
Two more working weeks before I get holidays.
Yes. I've got the annual general meeting. I've got all manner of alarums and excursions next week.
Have you? Back out on the town getting social?
No, I won't say... most of these are quite, but there's one rather jolly lunch, which I think would be
jolly
nice
lunch
to do,
good.
Which we're having. But six of us are having. Socially distanced?
Socially distanced jolly lunch, which is a business meeting, I imagine. Well, thank you to all of the people that help us, to Sam Brain, our producer, to my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew a caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, and to Jeffrey for doing all the hard work.
Thank you.
And to you, the listeners.
Thank you, Mo. I, as I always say, and I mean it, this was your idea, and it's been a joy to do, and wonderful listeners, and interesting people who keep in contact with you anyway on Instagram.
You can also email Jeffrey.
Yes, you can email me.
I'm very welcome. Website.
You can find me through my website.
But I do pass all your messages on.
Yep, always. And I think it underlines, Pistorius case underlines for me that my favourite saying, bad things happen to good people. So please do be careful out there.